It's At the Letters for Thursday, May 16th, 2024. Arden Swelling and Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. Thanks so much for listening. Ben, when we talked at this time last week, you said that kind of on the buy to sell Blue Jays spectrum, that you were as far towards the sell end as you have been at any point in the last several seasons. And what has happened since is the Blue Jays have played 5 games and they have gone 2-3 in those games. So they're now a game further below 500 than they were when you made that statement. So I cannot imagine that you're feeling any more optimistic about the Blue Jays as we sit here today, 7 days later.
Your read is accurate. That is all accurate. That's an accurate recollection of what I said. And yeah, I mean, as you've guessed, my opinion has shifted to slightly more negative about the Blue Jays. Not to just like go off the deep end from the beginning here, but I mean, like you said, they've lost more games than they've won. They had one really great offensive performance on Saturday against the Twins, but by and large, their offensive issues persist. So, and look, the season's not over. You know, no one's saying that, but it trended a little bit in the wrong direction this past week.
And the context of the 5 games that they just played is like kind of fascinating. Each one was its own Shakespearean tragedy or triumph, depending on the day. Like you look at, like we could even just like work backwards, right? So recording this on May 16th. So yesterday on Wednesday, the Blue Jays get walked off by Adley Rutschman in the 9th inning after like a ball hits a divot in front of Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and he commits an error. And then Adley hits a ball that is only homer in 9 of 30 ballparks, like took out his 7-iron to it, but It was a homer
in the one that counts.
It was a homer in the one they were playing in. Wouldn't have been a homer at Rogers Center, but it was a homer at Camden Yards. And this on a day in which the Blue Jays had MacGyvered their way out of like repeated high wire scenarios, but also on a night when they went 2-for-13 with runners in scoring position and left 9 on base. So that was the most recent one. Game before that was like the ultimate like gut check road win over those same Orioles in Baltimore on a night the Blue Jays had 9 position players available, literally John Schneider managing without a bench, and the Blue Jays get to Yennier Cano, like the only team in baseball apparently that can get to Cano, and you got these standout performances from Bo Bichette and Vlad and Dalton Varsho, and spirits are on a high. You go back one game from there, the Blue Jays getting 2 hit by Bailey Ober, who's allowing 1 hit over 6 1/3 while striking out 10. A game back from that is the signature win of the season. The Blue Jays come back from down 7-1. They're down 8-3. They come back. They beat the Twins 10-8, setting season highs in runs and hits. I was on the field after that game, and like the atmosphere in Rogers Center was as electric as I have felt it.
Swing and a line drive down in left center field. Biggio in to score. Behind him, Schneider. He'll score. We are tied. From 7-1 down, the Blue Jays have knotted it up at 8.
And then a game prior to that, the Blue Jays lose to the Twins when Ernie Clement laces a ball off the pitcher's ass directly to the first baseman with the tying run on third. So like each one of these games has been uniquely uplifting and uniquely torturous for Blue Jays fans. So I don't blame them for feeling emotionally spent after the last 5.
Yeah, it's been a ride for sure when you lay it out like that. And when you look at just the overall intensity of these games, it does connect to the lack of offense for this team, because when you're playing games that are so close and you don't give yourself a lead at any point, then you're going to be in these pressure pack situations, and you're going to be in situations where the direction of the carom off of Griffin Jax's rear end is going to matter. You know, if Ernie Clement is up there in a game where the Blue Jays had hit 4 home runs, kind of doesn't matter. You know, those plays aren't going to be magnified in the same way. But here we are. This Blue Jays team ranks 29th in baseball in runs scored. They are just not a good offensive team in this way. The offensive changes that they made this past winter, structurally behind the scenes, are not working. The personnel changes on the field are not working. They're big core players, as you pointed out many times, and rightfully so. Those guys, you know, Vladdy, Bo, they're coming around a little bit, but still, you look at the season, that production is not there. So offensively, it's just not a good enough team.
Yeah, and when you're constantly playing in high leverage and when the margins are constantly this thin, you're going to lose a lot of games like Wednesdays where a ball that hits a divot and an Adley Rutschman fly ball to right that I don't have it in front of me but couldn't have gone longer than like 365 feet matter and turn a game and turn a win into a loss. It's a zero-sum game. That one doesn't go into the tough loss category, just like the one, you know, the night before doesn't go into the hard-fought win category. It's either just a win or a loss. And if you're not going to be scoring more than the Blue Jays have to this point, your pitching's going to have to be perfect, your defense is going to have to be perfect, and the Blue Jays can pitch and defend as well as any team in the American League. They have a tremendous starting staff and they have really strong defense, but it's not going to be perfect and they aren't going to make all the plays. Jimmy Garcia can't pitch all nine innings. At some point, things are not going to go your way. You're going to give up runs. And when you don't have the buffer for baseball to baseball like that, you're going to end up losing a lot of games. You're going to end up below 500 as the Blue Jays are today.
Right. But like the teams that have a lot of tough losses pile up, I mean, those are the teams that lose a lot of games. Like if you have a lot of tough losses, that's just a sign you're not a very good team. Like the teams that find their way through those tough losses and turn them into those resounding wins, those are the teams that actually end up where they want to go at the end of the season. And the Blue Jays are a long way from that. They have 120 games to go. And so they have a lot of time. They have enough time to turn this thing around and to make this into an amazing comeback story for 2024. That time is still there. That opportunity still exists. And the right move for them at this point remains play it out, see what you can do, see if you can turn this thing around and give your players the chance to do that. So, you know, that'll be really interesting to see if that can happen. But so far, it just hasn't happened.
Yeah, it has been only 5 games since we last spoke. So I don't think like either of us can come on here and say it's over, blow it up, or they're back, they're going all the way. Like, I think that you could just replay our episode from a week ago and our opinions are going to be consistent because they've only played 5 games since. The thing that like grounds me in how I feel about this season now and going forward is just what the Blue Jays would have to do the rest of the way to get to where they're trying to go. So the Blue Jays are 19 and 23 through 42 games. They're 4 games under 500. As you said, 120 games remain to be played. They've only played 26% of their season. But if the Blue Jays want to get to 89 wins, which was good enough to get them the third wildcard spot last season, they need to go 70 and 50 the rest of the way. That is a 583 winning percentage. And in 2023, over the full season, only 4 teams played at better than a 570 pace: Atlanta, Baltimore, the Dodgers, and the Rays. So the Blue Jays have to play at the same pace as the top 4 teams in baseball last season just to get back to 89 wins, which just inched them into the third wild card spot last season.
Right. And then, okay, so you look at the projections, right? So like I can find myself, you know, getting too into the details or getting emotional about this. And I certainly, you know, I'm sure you do as well, Art, and you hear from fans, you hear from people in the organization. Everyone's got a stake. Everyone cares. And that's great. That's one of the fun things about sports and about baseball, obviously. We want people to care. But when you sort of step away from that and you look at the FanGraphs projected rest of season, then, you know, we're not going to be biased in any way. We're just going to look at what the numbers say. So the projections for the next 120 games suggest the Jays are a little bit above 500, 62 and 58, which would bring them to the end of the season at an 81 and 81 record, which that's never going to make the playoffs. I mean, that's 0% chance. And, you know, to be fair, the playoff odds right now do have them at a 23% chance. So they could, you know, exceed that, play better, have some hitters come around, maybe some minor leaguers come up, some better things in the bullpen. All of a sudden, you get a few breaks and you're back in this thing, which is still possible. But yeah, I think if you look at it objectively and you strip away the emotions from it, the Blue Jays are not in a good place.
No, they are as close to last place in the American League as they are to a wild card spot. They're five games up on the White Sox for last, and they're five games back of the Twins for the final wild card spot.
Oh, man.
It's not where you want to be. They have the second lowest run differential in the American League at negative 47 to the White Sox. As you mentioned, they've scored the second fewest runs in MLB to the White Sox. So the good news is that six of your next 12 are against the White Sox, but the bad news is everything else.
Yeah, man. I don't know that there's another way to really look at these facts, right? And we haven't heard from Ross Atkins on this recently. We hear from John Schneider daily, and of course, he's going to continue talking optimistically. I mean, what choice does he have? He has to, because if the Jays are going to get out of this thing, he needs to be that kind of grounding force for them, and he needs to be that voice of optimism. So, you know, that's what you expect to hear from the manager. But I find it hard to look at this set of information in front of us, look at these players, the way they're performing, the underlying stats and approaches, and bat speed, which we can get to, you know, leading to these results. I find it hard to look at all that and say, oh yeah, well, you know, but they're about to turn it around. I don't think they're a bad team. I really don't think they're a bad team, but you got to be better than that. You got to be actually pretty good, especially when you consider the hole that they've dug themselves.
Yeah, if they had, like, you know, I'm quickly ordering it here, you know, the Diamondbacks are below 500, but they have a plus 15 run differential. So you can at least make a case that they have been unlucky and that they ought to perform better going forward. The Blue Jays have a negative 47 run differential. If anything, they are lucky to be where they are now. I haven't looked up their Pythagorean recently, but I'm certain their Pythagorean record would suggest that they should be, like, you know, 2, 3, 4 games worse than they are to this point. And that's what, like, really amazing starting pitching will do for you, is, you know, you'll win a lot of those, like, one run tightly contested games. And other nights you're like, bullpen's going to get clobbered and you're going to get blown out. Like, I think the simplest way to put it is that, like, the Blue Jays just need to stop the bleeding immediately. Like, they're not going to turn this thing around overnight, but they are losing ground. Like, they are moving in the wrong direction. Since we last talked, they have moved one more game below 500. Like, they need to start winning series. They need to start taking 2 of 3 and 3 of 5 and 6 of 10 and just, like, progressively move in the right direction. Because if they don't stop the bleeding, they will just progressively fade into oblivion, and we will be talking about what they can get for Jimmy Garcia and Yusei Kikuchi come early July.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's absolutely true. 16-26, by the way, is their Pythagorean record. So, you know, that's
three games worse than where they are.
Yeah. They've actually been kind of fortunate. And, you know, I'll hear stuff. I'm sure some of our listeners hear stuff this time of year where it's like, you know, it's a tough schedule, and they've played a tough schedule, and they will continue to play a tough schedule. And to me, it's just like, that could not convince me less of anything. Like, it's just, this is Major League Baseball. Like, what, you think you get to October and then the schedule eases? Like, no, it gets harder. You know, if you want to win in baseball, you're going to have to beat the best teams. Like, playing a hard schedule and surviving in the face of a hard schedule, that's the challenge. So don't tell me that it's hard. Like, what are we talking about? I'm not saying the players shouldn't, you know, they can hold on to whatever they need to hold on to. I'm not saying that they can't use that, but, you know, I think as an objective sort of piece of analysis, I mean, that doesn't convince me at all.
Well, I remember making this argument at the beginning of the season when everyone was saying, "Wow, the Blue Jays have this really tough, like, schedule out of the gates. They're playing these really good teams." Like, yeah, show me the version of the MLB schedule where the Blue Jays aren't playing quality competition early in April. They play in the American League East. Like, the Yankees, the Orioles, the Red Sox, the Rays, they all play in this division, and the highest proportion of games played in any division for the Blue Jays is obviously going to be in the AL East. And you can even look at the Rays, right, and say, "Oh, they're not as good this year, they're only 500 well, they've won 8 of their last 12, and they're averaging 5 runs per game over that span. I don't know exactly what the Blue Jays are averaging, but it's not 5 runs, it's probably 3 point something. And, like, Yandy Diaz is on a complete tear, and Isak Paredes is just, like, pulling everything over the wall, and is riding a 14 game on base streak. You know, this is, like, the Rays will play the Red Sox tonight, and maybe they'll get blown out, and maybe they'll, you know, that'll take away their momentum as they come into Toronto. But like, even the team aside from the Blue Jays that is playing the worst in the AL East is playing really well over its last couple of weeks, 8 of its last 12. So really, like, on form right now, on results right now, the Blue Jays are the worst team in the American League East. They have been the worst team in the American League East. So the schedule is always going to be difficult as long as they are playing in this division.
Yeah. You know who else thinks it's a tough schedule? I mean, the Marlins and the Rockies, because the Marlins don't get to play the Marlins. You know, it's like, you know, if you're not playing well, then the schedule's always going to look that much tougher. And I, you know, again, I think the Blue Jays are, I actually do think that they're like a pretty solid team. I don't think that they're like abysmal, but, you know, they have some real issues when it comes to their hitting, and that's half the game. So, you know, their starting rotation has maybe low key, like, never looked better. I mean, not like never, but it's been a long time since it's looked this good. It looks quite good. And the bullpen, I think, you know, we can get to these things in more detail, but the bullpen should improve in some significant ways. But hey, scoring runs is half the game, and they look to be pretty substantially below average, not only with the actual runs scored, but with home runs, with WRC plus. The numbers behind the scenes are not looking good. Not to mention, again, 30th in Major League Baseball when it comes to bat speed with the new bat tracking information that we have.
Yeah, we can get, you know, super granular on this stuff in the second half, but like, as long as it's big picture, you know, as you mentioned, like, the Blue Jays can, they can look ahead at like the games against the White Sox coming up as like, we finally have a soft spot in our schedule. The majority of other teams in baseball look at the Blue Jays as their soft spot in the schedule. That's kind of that's the reality when you're four games under 500. Like, the White Sox are going to be in the Bronx before they come to Toronto. So they're going to be like, whew, thankfully we don't have to play the Yankees anymore. We get to go beat up on the Blue Jays a little bit. Like, at least we know they won't pound their pitching staff. At least they know, you know, we know they aren't going to, like, you know, boat race us for 10 runs a night.
That's true.
And then from Toronto, the White Sox play Baltimore before playing Toronto again. So they're going to go Yankees, Blue Jays, Orioles, Blue Jays. Which of those four series do you think the White Sox are circling as, like, here's where we make ground? Like, here's where we get out of this thing. They're looking at the Blue Jays.
Yeah, it's those games where, hey, I would anyone be that shocked if the White Sox win like 3-2, then the Jays win 7-2, and then the White Sox win 2-1? Like, it just wouldn't be shocking anymore, because the Jays don't have the offensive firepower, have not demonstrated having the offensive firepower. I mean, maybe it's in there, right? Bo Bichette obviously is capable of a lot more than what he's showing, although he is heating up.
And Bichette just got underneath one on the 1-2 pitch, rocks it. Deep and gone, Bo Bichette with a solo shot. Just his second home run of the season, but maybe that is what busts him out of his funk.
But they are not demonstrating as a collective, or for the most part as individuals, that they have enough to turn this thing around offensively.
No, and the Blue Jays are about to play 13 games in 13 days, and then they have an off day, and then they play another 13 in 13. So they're actually about to play 26 over the next 27 days. So, you know, you better hope that they're over the flus, and you better hope that, you know, everybody's over any kind of discomfort and any kind of, you know, nagging injuries, and everyone is like ready to go with some, like, a lot of travel mixed in there as well. And, you know, a tough opponent in the Rays, but then obviously, you know, White Sox, Detroit, White Sox, Pittsburgh. I mean, if the Blue Jays don't turn things around there, if they don't get back to 500 there, you're now into like the first week of June, and you got four against the Orioles from June 3rd to 6th. Like, that could be kind of the pivot point of the season. Like, that could be the point where it's, you know, you're starting to make some really tough decisions if you're not above 500.
Yeah. I mean, it's wild that we're even having these discussions. You know, but I think it's the reasonable way to look at this team. And I think, you know, to take it away from the Blue Jays just for a second, because I do think it's worth doing that kind of gut check. I think we'd be having the same discussion if we were covering the Mets. You know, they're 19-23 right now, or the Giants, they're 20-25 right now.
Astros.
The Astros, right? You have to. They're 18-25. Even the Tigers, like, the Tigers can't score any runs. They have great pitching, but, you know, what are they going to do? They're 21-22. So that's the range that the Jays are in. And none of those teams are about to sell today, but none of those teams are necessarily going to be buyers, and they all need to be considering selling. They really do, especially the Astros. So, you know, to your point, the Jays get swept, they lose, they go 2-5, they go 2-7 for a week or 10 days. All of a sudden, it's like that's kind of what you're going to do.
Yeah, it's something that's going to happen progressively. Like, everyone looks for like that one turning point, right? Because like that win over the Twins on Saturday at Rogers Center, where the Blue Jays came back from down 7-1, felt like a turning point, right? Like, it felt like, okay, the offense has woken up, Vlad and Bo are swinging it better lately, like our bullpen kept us in a game. I think it was over the last five innings they held the Twins to like a hit. You know, like things, this is now we go, like this is the turning point, this is where it happens. But I mean, it's MLB. The next day, like Bailey Ober holds you to a hit over 6 1/3 and strikes out 10. And then, you know, hands it over to, like, you know, what was that guy's name? Funderburk? Like, just, you know, dudes out of the bullpen who are just continuing to just contain the Blue Jays. And all that momentum is just sapped because turning points are kind of fictional. Like, it's kind of it's a thing from a movie, right? Like, baseball seasons, it's sort of progressive ebbs and flows, and it's progressive waves, and you just want your highs to be sustained a little bit longer than your lows. Like, there are, you know, when we get to July and it's actually, okay, the Blue Jays are buyers or they are sellers, like, we're not going to look back and see one definitive turning point that we'll be able to point to and say, you know, aha, that's when they became postseason contenders, or like, yep, there's where the season was over. It's something that'll happen progressively over time. It's like a slow frame by frame reveal until the picture is abundantly clear. And the picture that has been revealed to this point is one of a team that's going to miss playoffs, and one of a team that's likely going to be a seller at the deadline and potentially experience turnover in the front office and on the coaching staff. So there's still time for that to change. Like, we only have 26% of the picture revealed, but until the Blue Jays start progressively moving things in the opposite direction, that is unfortunately where this is headed.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's a gradual reveal. And I think I'm a football fan, but I'm not a fan of a specific team. So I don't know if this holds 100%, but I imagine that, you know, if you're a really big fan of, I don't know, let's say it's the Bills, then, you know, maybe this is a bad example because they do make the playoffs, but a team that's on the edge of the playoffs and they're trying to get in, there's one play that separates them from getting in versus not getting in, then like you could actually look, because the records are, the samples are so small, every game has such huge significance on the actual schedule, that maybe you could actually point to like one, you know, interception that flipped the entire season. I don't think that really holds in baseball because there's so many different chances. It's never just going to be one play or one call. It's going to be that gradual accumulation of plays. And really, at the end of it, you're going to end up where you should be. So if the Jays are sellers, they really have no one to blame but themselves.
Aren't you a Chiefs guy? I thought you were a Chiefs guy.
I'm a front runner when it comes to the NFL. Like, I like watching Patrick Mahomes. He's incredible. But if Patrick Mahomes was traded to like the Jags, I would watch the Jags. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really care.
All right. Fair enough. Let's step away and let's put the big picture behind us and let's get a little bit more granular, a little bit more micro with the Blue Jays, all that and so much more when we continue on At the Letters.
Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers are Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. Ben, let's do some positive, man. Like, that was a heavy first half. You know, we can only work with the materials that we are given, but the Blue Jays are giving us some good materials and some positive things. I'd like to start with Jaime Garcia, because on form this year, over the first quarter of the MLB season, I would put him on a very short list of best relievers in baseball. It would be like him. Clay Holmes should be on that list. I mean, you know, Mason Miller should be on that list. I think Emmanuel Class A is like always going to be on that list when healthy. But we're taught, you know, I don't know that Jaime Garcia is the best reliever in baseball this year, but it is not a stretch at all to call him one of the top five.
Grounded to first. And what a job by Jaime Garcia.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, like, you know, further to that point, if the Jays are trying to lock down a save situation, tomorrow night as we record this on Thursday against the Rays, and of course it probably would be Jordan Romano, but if they had three crucial outs to get, I find it hard to think of many relievers that I would rather have in that situation than Jimmy Garcia. And Mason Miller's probably the number one, just the way he's pitching right now. I don't know. I think I might put Jimmy Garcia second. Like, and obviously there's a lot of bias there because we see him a lot, but like, he's up there.
You'd rather have him than Clay Holmes?
I think so.
You know, you'd rather have him than Emmanuel Clase? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, Jimmy Garcia right now, 5 hits allowed in 17 innings. You know, he's been so hard to square up, and he's faced good hitters too. This is the other thing. He's not facing the 7-8-9 for other teams. He's facing the 2-3-4 for a lot of really good teams. So I actually think that his numbers might actually undersell how dominant he's been.
Well, and I think that flexibility is one of the more impressive things. Like, Jimmy does not care when he pitches. Like, he doesn't care if he pitches the 9th. He doesn't care if he pitches the 6th. He doesn't care if he pitches the 8th. And the Blue Jays bring him on with runners on. They bring him into no outs and two runners in scoring position situations, as they did on Wednesday. They give him clean innings. They, like, have him face the heart of the order. They have him face pockets of righties. He faces lefties. Like, it just does not matter to him. He just attacks regardless of what situation he's put in. And like, it's not the case with all relievers. Like, some guys are their utility is a lot narrower, and there are certain parts of lineups that you're trying to keep certain guys away from. There's no part of any lineup that you wouldn't throw Jimmy Garcia at. So, you know, I think that after Jordan Romano blows a save on Wednesday, there's probably going to be quite a bit of discussion about, Jimmy Garcia should be the closer. I would suggest that Jimmy Garcia is actually more valuable in the role that he's in right now, where he's facing massive leverage in the 7th and 8th inning. Like, you look at that Wednesday game, I mean, he comes in with runners on 2nd and 3rd with nobody out to face Jordan Westberg and Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson, like, just to face the best hitters in the Orioles lineup, and he leaves those runners right where they are. And then he comes back for a 2nd inning, and it's like Santander and Mateo and Cowser. He basically took like a full trip through the Orioles lineup in that game. If Jimmy Garcia is your closer in that game, if you're saving him for the 9th, like, who's pitching in those massive spots in the 7th and 8th? Like, who's getting the ball to Jimmy in the 9th? So honestly, I think that Jordan Romano stays right where he is the Blue Jays closer, the 9th inning guy, obviously capable of going, you know, more than one if you'd like him to, and if he's looking good. But I think that for the Blue Jays, having Jimmy Garcia as this guy who you can deploy in a bunch of various scenarios is actually the most valuable role for him to play on this team.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable argument. And, you know, Jordan Romano, obviously tough one on Wednesday with the home run allowed, the walk-off. But at the same time, I'm when I'm looking at the issues on this team, when I'm looking at the issues even within this bullpen, Jordan Romano just isn't really high on that list of concerns for me. I think he's going to be a good closer for this team. And so if that allows you to deploy Jimmy Garcia in these different spots, great. And then, you know, you have the other spots in the bullpen to worry about. But I think that's a nice configuration where you have the dominance of a Jimmy Garcia deployed in the spots of the game where you're facing the most traffic or the most pressure.
Yeah. And it's kind of cool to watch how he's been doing it. You know, he developed this sweeper over the offseason while he was working out with Frankie Montas and Dennis Santana. Like, those guys threw all winter in Arizona, and those guys like helped him develop this sweeper and helped him improve his changeup. He's not coming into these spots and going like just fastball curveball or just fastball slider, sinker slider. He's throwing like 4 or 5 different pitches in these spots. It's what makes him so hard to handle, and he's locating all of them too. Like, nothing's over the heart of the plate. Everything's to the edges. Obviously, like, he's throwing hard and his spinning stuff is breaking a ton, but like, this is a guy who is throwing a starter's arsenal in short stint relief outings. Like, it's just very impressive to watch him do this. And as you said, like, for the Blue Jays bullpen, like, you feel great about the back end of it, honestly. Like, I know Jordan Romano just blew a save, but he's actually been one of the most successful closers for the last 3 seasons. He's 2nd to Josh Hader in save conversion rate over that time. So you feel great about him. You feel great about Jimmy Garcia. It's just from there, it is a series of question marks because Eric Swanson's struggles have continued. Yanesis Cabrera has been unreliable. Tim Mayza has been better of late, but still not a guy who you want facing a ton of righties. Trevor Richards is like, it's kind of the long guy, so you're sort of saving him for extended periods. He's been good, but I don't know that you want to thrust him into like a seventh inning leverage role against the heart of the order. Zach Pop's been okay, but again, not not tested in leverage. There's just a lot of question marks beyond the final two in this bullpen, and I think that's why it's performed the way it has to this point.
Yeah, we talked about it a bit last week with, you know, having to remove Swanson from leverage, and I think that was actually one of the few sort of suggestions that I made that the Blue Jays actually followed up on. And
George Springer still hitting leadoff. Danny Jansen still batting sixth. Yeah, Vogelback. Yeah. If you were like, yeah, you can DFA Vogelback. If anything, he's actually playing more since you made that suggestion.
He's playing all the time. And I understand part of that is just the need because they've been dealing with a lot of sick players. But yeah, I mean, Vogelback has not, but unless I missed it, we're still waiting for that first home run, right? Does he have an extra base hit as a Blue Jay? He's a couple doubles.
I'm pretty sure he's got some garbage time doubles. But
yeah, his OPS is 405. Like, he's really not producing. I mean, obviously, I stand by that point and still think Spencer Horwitz deserves a shot. I mean, that's not too controversial.
You gave the Blue Jays like seven very reasonable suggestions and they rejected all seven of them outright.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you didn't call for anyone to be fired. You didn't call for like any major shuffles. It was all very like small marginal stuff and not a single one.
Small scale, just fiddling with the dials. And the only one they did was Eric Swanson. Hey, worked out pretty well. The other ones didn't work out so well. Maybe the Jays should listen to this week's episode. I don't know. But yeah, when it comes to the bullpen, yeah, okay, here's my suggestion for this week. Yanisis Cabrera, keep him away from leverage. Oh my goodness, this guy is not effective right now. 14 and two-thirds innings, 31 base runners. He's not near the plate often enough. He does not retire the left-handed hitters. He is tasked with retiring, whether it's Kepler on the weekend. We've seen it with Yordan. We've seen it with Soto. This guy needs to work his way back into leverage. I even think there's a case to be made for, you know, replacing him with someone like a Brendan Little on the roster. Unfortunately, at their AAA team, does not have a lot of relievers who are absolutely, you know, performing at peak levels right now. But man, Yanisis Cabrera not pitching well. Do not think that this guy should be pitching anywhere near high leverage at this point.
I would say that on Friday, the Blue Jays should activate Bowden Francis. He's had one rehab outing, but like he just blitzed through two innings, struck out four, gave up only a hit, you know, 28 pitches, 20 for strikes. I don't think that you need to give him any more time. I think that his next appearance should be out of the Blue Jays major league bullpen. And likewise with Chad Green, like, sure, give him one rehab outing. But if he looks good and feels good, whoop, right back into the big league bullpen, because the Blue Jays just need better alternatives right now than what they have.
I like that. And honestly, you can DFA Genesis. To me, like, he has an option. Even better, you can option him. Yeah, option Yanisis Cabrera, and then boom, Bowden Francis is up. There you go. That, to me, perfect solution.
Yeah, I mean, Cabrera, Pop, and Pearson all have options. So yeah, I mean, you've got many avenues you can take to get Francis, Chad Green, and eventually Yariel Rodriguez back onto this roster, because I think when Rodriguez returns, it will likely be as a reliever. I remember us talking about this when he made his first start for the Blue Jays. I was like, can you imagine this guy in high leverage relief if he just like the fastball played up and he just threw the slider and put away the splitty and just went fastball slider and aired it out for an inning or two, someone who can also give you a bit of length if you need it. I think that those three could really make the Blue Jays bullpen a lot more of a reliable group, one that you can have a lot more confidence in if you can get them back soon.
Yeah, and honestly, like, of those three guys with options that you mentioned, I would actually be inclined to keep Zach Pop up in the majors. I mean, if they decide they need the second lefty, they need to keep Yanisis Cabrera up, all right, maybe they're optioning Pearson. Okay, but I would keep Zach Pop up. I actually think he's looked pretty good. He's got that nice, easy delivery, 97. you know, with a lot of sink. And I kind of like what I'm seeing from him.
Strike three call. Good inning for Zach Pop. Three up, three down with a couple of strikeouts as he takes.
When he's on, he is Clay Holmes-esque. Like, his sinker is untouchable. Like, when it's moving, when he's locating it down in the zone, like, he doesn't even need to throw his slider. He could just pump sinkers, and he's either going to get ground balls or swing and miss if he's locating it where he wants to. Now, it's been a bit inconsistent. Like, we've seen him not have his command at times. We've seen him leave pitches up and pay the price, whether he's like giving up homers or extra base hits. So that can be troubling. But yeah, if he's consistent, if he's locked in, dialed in, throwing that pitch where he needs to, he can be really effective.
Yeah, that's a big one for the Jays. But yeah, they need answers right there because it has not been effective enough. And they're playing a lot of close games, so they need that bullpen to step up.
Okay, optimistic point number two. Alek Manoah had a very solid outing against big leaguers in which there wasn't any luck behind it. It wasn't a BABIP situation. It's not like he gave up a bunch of missiles or a hit directly at guys. He looked as good as he has looked at the big league level since 2022. Seven innings he goes against the Minnesota Twins. One walk, four hits, one homer to Carlos Santana. Six strikeouts. But you even look at the homer to Santana, and it's a 2-0 changeup, like two ball widths off the plate. I don't think that he needs to throw that pitch any differently. I think that a veteran hitter just did an unbelievable thing that he apparently only does against the Toronto Blue Jays. The alternative would be like, what, fastball on the plate? I don't think that's what you want there. 2-0. He throws him a changeup, two ball widths off the plate, and, you know, gets tagged for homer. All three runs unearned, obviously, because of an error by Ernie Clement. So, I mean, Alek Manoah could have even been out of that inning at that point. So it's really tough to hang that on him. Very encouraging outing. Changeup usage up big time. The fastball was moving. He was efficient. He was quick. He was confident on the mound, retiring batters quickly, pumping up his defenders, you know, pitching with a swag and with an energy. That is something that he can build on going forward.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you and I were both covering that game. And for a while, it was like, man, did like the last year and a half just not happen? You know, it's so jarring. It was really weird because I've gotten, you know, we've all gotten used to this, to the ups and downs now of Alek Manoah since the beginning of the 2023 season, the struggles to try to get back to that form. And he had flashes of it last year. He did have a couple really good starts in 2023, but wow, I got to admit, I was not expecting that. And not to say that I didn't think that maybe he can go out and, you know, give them four or five innings. I mean, I thought, you know, that's on the table, but I was not expecting him to pitch into the seventh, to be around the plate as much as he was, to throw the changeup as much as he did after only throwing it once in his season debut. He was great. Like, this was, like you said, it wasn't smoke and mirrors. This was, and I don't know if it can be sustained. He is a long way from proving that he is back. I'm not saying otherwise, but for that one afternoon, he looked phenomenal.
And a 1-2 changeup to get him. And he got him. He chased way out of the strike zone, and he strikes him out.
Manoah reaches back and fires. Swing and a miss, strike three. Foul tipped. Manoah skips off the mound with a third straight scoreless frame.
Yeah, the task now will be, he's put it on video now that you can use that changeup a lot against a lineup with a bunch of lefties in it. So I guess his next one will be against the Rays this weekend. And you know that's going to be a focal point of their game planning for him going in. And you know that they're going to be dialing up the traject to throw a bunch of Alek Manoah changeups at their lefties so that they can see it and time it up and get their swings right. So the adjustment game from here is going to be interesting to watch play out because the Twins seemed to not be prepared for that many changeups. And why would they be? He threw only one in his season debut against the Nationals. And then he was like featuring it a whole bunch against the Twins. But I think that the thing that will help him going forward is just carrying that conviction and that aggressiveness, that attack mentality forward. Like, that really is the biggest thing I took away from that start, was just how many plate appearances were like 0-1, 1-1, ground ball.
Yeah.
0-1, 0-2, 1-2 strikeout. You know, like the how often he got ahead and put hitters away quickly when he did. It was like one of the really tough things about watching him in 2023 was how often he would get to two strikes and how often he would get ahead of hitters and not be able to put them away. And it would go, you know, 0-1, 0-2, foul ball, ball, foul ball, foul ball, ball, ball. And now you're like nine pitches in with a full count when you were 0-2 on a guy, and you're just like not able to put them away. So to me, that aggressiveness, that conviction in the zone, letting his stuff play, getting weak contact, weak fly balls, ground balls to the left side, all that stuff, like if he can carry that forward, even if hitters are more prepared for the changeups with him, he should still be able to be effective.
Yeah, and we saw some of that swagger, as you mentioned, some of that excitement from Manoah. I think so much of that, I mean, that stems from the results, and the results stem from throwing strikes, and that connects back to the delivery, where we did see a more consistent delivery, where he was able to generate that athletic motion down the mound and generate some good extension toward the plate and just be in the strike zone consistently. It's easy to say, it's really hard to do against major league hitters, but he was able to do that, and it does set up an interesting matchup this weekend where, you know, the Rays are always tough and these things never play out the way you think they will. But I will say that they don't have Brandon Lau, one of their better left-handed hitters. They traded away Luke Raley. So, you know, the Rays, like the Twins actually are a really good team when it comes to stacking lefties and kind of line changing, as the Blue Jays know all too well from last year's playoffs. But the Rays, I don't know if they're quite as adept doing that this year, but they'll do their best, I'm sure, on the weekend.
Yeah, they're just playing really well right now. They've won 8 of 12, scoring 5 runs per game over that span. And a lot of that's been Yandy Diaz, and a lot of it's been Isak Paredes, but like they do seem to have found a bit of momentum and found a bit of a stride recently. So hey, it's baseball. We'll see. Anything can happen over 3 games. All I know is the Blue Jays need to win 2 of those 3. Like, just need to reverse course here and stop spinning their wheels and actually slowly, progressively sinking further into the mud. They need to start pulling themselves out. On Manoah, by the way, the league average ERA for starters this year is 3.95. If you get a 4 ERA out of Alek Manoah the rest of the way, averaging like 5 innings per start, gravy. That's all you need. That is it. Like, he does, you know, as the number 5 in this rotation, that is better production from the number 5 spot than probably 29 other teams are going to get.
Yeah.
Like, every team in baseball has a question mark at his number 5. Every team is throwing bullpen days. Every team is starting a guy who they aren't that confident in. So if Alek Manoah can bring that kind of reliability in the 5 spot going forward, just like a hair above a league average ERA and, you know, 5 and dive, that's all they need from him.
Well, and let's remember too, this is also a guy who was at one point a big part of their core. And, you know, regardless of what happens in 2024, not to look past this season, but, you know, here we are. It is not a guarantee they actually make the playoffs this year. But if part of what happens this year is Manoah can actually get back on track, that would be huge. Now, again, we're a long way from that. He has not convinced, you know, I don't think anyone, that he's fully back to where he needs to be. And I think that, in fact, as we look ahead, there's a ton of volatility here. I find him personally like a super hard pitcher to kind of anticipate day to day, week to week. I'm sure I'm not alone in thinking that, just based on how variable these results have been. But clearly the upside is still there. So as long as that upside is still there, he does remain a pretty intriguing pitcher to watch.
The Blue Jays offense. Let's finish here. The Blue Jays have a bottom 10 batting average. They have a bottom 10 slugging percentage. They have a league average on base percentage. They do walk at a decent clip, and they don't strike out very much. They have one of the lowest strikeout rates in the game. So they are reaching base, they are walking, they are putting balls in play, but they are not hitting for any power whatsoever. They have the second fewest home runs of any team in baseball, only 35 home runs through 42 games. And I don't have their numbers of runners in scoring position in front of me, but I promise you they are among the worst in baseball. The Blue Jays have not capitalized on the opportunities that they have created. They have not done a good enough job of getting the big swing that they need in really consequential moments. Do you have any more suggestions for how the Blue Jays can reverse course offensively from a team that has scored the second fewest runs in baseball to maybe even just getting themselves back to like a league average run scoring team?
Yeah, honestly, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's a simple fix. When it comes to changes around the edges, I mean, sure, you know, we can point to something like bring up Horowitz for Vogelback. We all know that's not going to fundamentally shift this offense. So I honestly don't know. As we've been saying, a lot of this comes down to core players and how much of their kind of previous established levels they can recapture. We've seen Bo Bichette take a lot better swings recently. Vlad Guerrero Jr. having himself a really good May. So those are positives for the Blue Jays, but I don't see a solution. I do see some, you know, regression to the mean, which in the Blue Jays case will be positive. But that's not going to transform things entirely. And if you look at the behind the scenes numbers, is some of which you were just mentioning, you know, this doesn't scream, you know, offensive juggernaut. So I don't know. Do you see anything there to turn this thing around for them?
It's execution in big spots, and it's your best players being your best players. Like getting like more out of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette over the last week has been massive. Like that has been huge. I think for Vlad, you'd like to see him hitting for a bit more power. Like you're not going to, you know, if he just wants to hit 400 the rest of the way with singles, I mean, you're not going to like turn that away, but he is a guy who needs to be hitting a lot of home runs for this team. Like he has as much raw power as anybody in baseball. And I don't need to cite the exit velocity numbers for you to demonstrate that. He's just not getting the ball into the seats. Like he's just not hitting enough homers. Like the list of players in MLB that have more homers than him this year is substantial. There are players on the Blue Jays who have more homers than him. Justin Turner has as many homers as him. Danny Jansen has as many homers and has played fewer than half the games. Danny Jansen has 66 plate appearances. Vlad has 185. They both have four homers. So like that's something that still needs to change. That power still needs to come from Vlad. Bo Bichette looks like he's just going to carry on being Bo Bichette from here on forward. That's big. George Springer is still not doing enough. And he's leading off for this team, and his numbers among MLB leadoff hitters are, if not the worst, among the worst. And he just has like not been able to get himself out of this funk. He has not been able to turn things around. Talk about guys who aren't hitting for power. George Springer is up there for the Blue Jays in terms of just not getting a lot out of his swing when it comes to power. We're seeing some singles. We're seeing some, you know, a double here and there. He's still walking. He's still got a great plate approach. Like he's not chasing. He's working long plate appearances, but that's another guy who the Blue Jays are relying on for power and they haven't gotten it. So yeah, until they start getting it from guys like Guerrero and guys like Springer, I just don't think there's anywhere else on this roster where you're going to make up for the homers that you've been missing to this point.
Right. Cause you know, you do have some guys who are doing a pretty nice job, whether it's David Schneider. It's not like you're going to ask for any more from him. Even IKF, like it's kind of what you hope for. He's technically a below average hitter, but that's what he's always been in the major leagues. That's fine. He's 95 OPS plus. Jansen, you're not really looking for any more. Varsho, you're not looking for much more than what he's done. So, you know, you have players who are producing, maybe not quite at their literal ceilings, but close enough where you're pretty content with the production. So it does come back to some of those big players. And I remember saying to you in one of our episodes, you know, in spring training, setting up the season, that hey, this would be a really good year for George Springer to maybe put together that 30-35 homer season that he has never had with the Blue Jays since signing for $150 million. And you know, now we're looking at his numbers, he's got three homers. We're 26% of the way through the season. So, you know, he's on pace for, you know, I don't know,
12.
Yeah, right? Like that's not 30. That's not even 20. So this is a really, and I don't have to tell anyone, everyone, you know, if you listen to ATL, you've heard us talk about this for a few weeks now. But yeah, it's really not good. You know, you still need him. You still need him to turn it around. But when I look at this offense overall, I think we have to adjust our expectations based on what we've seen this first quarter of the season. This is a group that I don't, you know, going into it, I thought they could be maybe a top 10 offense in baseball. I no longer think that. I think that best case for them is more like, I don't know, 15th to the 20th in Major League Baseball from here on. Like, is that too pessimistic as you look at things?
Yeah, it's best case, 12 to 14th. Best case. Realistic, 15 to 20.
Yeah, 15 to 20 is like a realistic, solid case.
Right? Because right now they're probably, it depends on how you measure it, but like right now they're probably around like 20 to 25. They're kind of somewhere in that range. And that's not good enough. Like, it's just not going to get it done.
Right. And that's like in WRC plus. Obviously in runs, they're 28th.
Yeah, I think about, I'm talking offense like in terms of overall, right? And their overall offense right now is a 95 WRC plus. So it's below league average. It needs
their
to be above.
Their process. So like their results so far have been extremely, extremely poor. Their process has also been quite below average as far as, you know, WRC plus. And with runners in scoring position, which you mentioned before, they're 28th in baseball in WRC plus.
Yeah, that's the one thing I'm actually really confident in turning. Like, I think that over, and it might not happen in May and it might not happen in June, but at some point, like, the results with runners in scoring position are going to come. I don't think the Blue Jays are going to have a 587 OPS with runners in scoring position for the entire season. That is second worst in baseball to the Chicago White Sox. They have only 4 home runs with runners in scoring position this season. Ooh. That is last in baseball. They're hitting 207 with runners in scoring position. That's fourth last in baseball. Like, I do not believe that will continue. I believe that their production in those spots will get better at some point, as we saw last season, and I think actually the season before as well. You know, you can be really bad at runners in scoring position for like 3 months to start the year. Like, it can sustain longer than this and then come on torrentially over the back half. Like, that's just like kind of how the luck clusters sometimes. But that is also kind of a really bad case scenario for the Blue Jays, because then that means that their runners in scoring position results and their kind of luck in those situations is going to turn too late. Like, it'll turn at a time when they've already put themselves in too much of a hole. Yeah. They've already lost too many games. They're already, trading Danny Jansen. Like, they're already moving guys to the deadline. So if that if that comes back around in like mid-July, if it starts to turn, it's just going to be too late. The Blue Jays will be in too much of a hole by that point.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, this is where, the sequencing of a season matters too, where obviously you want to get off to a good start, because then that emboldens everyone to push harder and to make those trades and to add on and to maybe you add a little talent. But, you know, at this point, what's done is done. And so the Blue Jays have to play the hand that's in front of them. And it is, to extend that analogy, this card game isn't over, but it's definitely not looking great.
Yeah, and I really do think it's just as simple as Springer, Bichette, Guerrero playing better and driving the offense, and then continuing to get what you're getting from Dalton Varsho, getting Justin Turner like out of this funk that he's been in for a few weeks, and then, as you said, continuing to get what you've gotten from Kiner Falefa and the Ernie Clement and David Schneider, if anything, is playing above his head to this point. You might expect that his numbers will come down a bit over the rest of the year, but he is clearly an above average hitter in MLB. Maybe like a 110 WRC plus, like true talent, or 115. Like, that's valuable. That's an everyday player. Like, that's a guy who you want in your lineup every single day. So like the big things that have to change are the big three. It's like Vlad, Bo, and George. That's really it. And because you could do anything you want with the batting order. You can hit George Springer anywhere you want. If he's going to have a 68 weighted runs created plus over the entire season, you've got a massive problem. Like, that is a way bigger problem than him hitting leadoff or not. Like, that's a guy who you owe $50 million to over the next two seasons, and a guy who you believed was part of your core and what you were going to build your team around. Like, as much as you baked in some decline for George Springer over the back half of this deal, you still baked in above average MLB production. Like, you didn't bake in a 68 WRC plus. You didn't bake in him hitting 200 and only having 3 home runs a quarter of the way into the season. That wasn't baked in. And if that continues, that's a really big problem going forward.
Yeah, exactly. That would turn the contract from being like, okay, maybe not great, but all right, you know, he was a part of some good teams, to, whoa, this got really bad, this got really weighty, and he just didn't deliver on the back half. Because if it's looking like this in year four, it's hard to imagine that it gets way better in year five or year six.
Yeah, totally. And that's kind of why I think that, like, whatever you want to do with the batting order, go ahead. I don't think it's going to have make a major impact. Like, clearly, like, George Springer, based on results, should not be hitting leadoff. But I kind of think that no matter where you put him in the lineup, it's not going to matter if he doesn't start producing better. Like, you can fire the manager, you can fire all the hitting coaches. I don't know that that's really going to change anything and cause Springer, Bichette, Guerrero to start producing to their potential. Like, you can run a friggin' line change on the bench and you can, like, right? You can DFA Vogelbach and Clement and option Biggio and bring up Barger, Martinez, Lucas, Horwitz. Like, you can just totally cycle that out. I don't think it's going to make a meaningful difference to the Blue Jays production going forward. It really is their best players being their best players. That's what needs to happen.
Vlad Jr. just needed to see Donnie Baseball packing his bag, sadly, before he could finally get some loft under those line drives. Yeah, I mean, it's, I agree. I think, you can't, it's not as though firing all the hitting infrastructure would necessarily shift things. Although I will say, certainly not getting a lot of reason to believe that the changes this offseason improved things. I'm not saying that 42 games is a conclusive sample, but certainly wouldn't be looking at this and saying, oh yeah, that helped move things forward.
Yeah, if the Blue Jays after last season said, okay, we got to do things differently, like offensively, we got to have a better game planning process, we got to communicate information better, we got to overhaul this whole thing, it's been worse this year. They've been, like, a lot of people will say, oh, the Blue Jays, like, the 2024 Blue Jays is just an extension of the 2023 team. No, they're actually worse than the 2023 team. You're watching a worse product right now.
Yeah, and that was a team that, you know, toward the end of it, there was a lot of frustration there as far as, you know, as we've talked about how information was being communicated and even, you know, how many coaches are in the dugout, who's in the dugout at one, you know, at various times. These were things that came up with the players on the team toward the end of last year. And, you know, now it's a new year and some of those issues were resolved or, you know, the team moved forward in different ways, but the results ultimately speak for themselves.
And one thing that I think could happen on Friday and probably should happen would be Ross Atkins having a general media availability. He hasn't had one since opening day. And he is someone who can speak to those structures and can, like, speak to that overhaul and can speak to how they're trying to do things differently. And like, he can talk about what has happened over the first quarter of the season and the reasons why the office is encouraged or believes, like, has reason for optimism going forward. Like, he can talk about the posture of the team and where he feels like it's headed and how he thinks things can change. Like, I think that Friday would be a good time for that to happen, for us to come out and talk to that, because John Schneider's been wearing this every day for like a month and a half. And I think it would be good for Ross to come out and talk to not just to the media, but by extension to the fan base.
Yeah, I'm sure fans would be very interested to hear, you know, what the perspective of the front office is on the team, because I think anyone watching this team has probably come up with a few questions of their own. So be interested to hear what the front office thinks of it.
We shall see. Plenty of intrigue and happenings and events to come with the Blue Jays. As you said, 120 games to be played, 4.5 months of baseball to go. Each week we feel like the Blue Jays have hit their nadir, and each week they prove us wrong. So we'll see what next week brings. But for Ben Nicholson-Smith, I'm Arden Zwelling. I want to thank our producers, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. I want to thank all of you for listening. We'll talk to you next week on At the Letters.